Joining us on this episode of Banking on Kansas City is Tony Jones, the Nerman Family President at the Kansas City Art Institute. Tony joined KCAI in December 2014 as interim president. He's an internationally known arts administrator, broadcaster, educator, exhibition curator, and historian of art, architecture, and design, as well as a consultant on higher education in the arts. Welcome to Banking on Kansas City, Tony.
Well, thank you very much.
Kansas City Art Institute is a hidden gem to many Kansas Cityans. I mean, they might know that it's a four-year college of art and design, but what they might not be aware of is how central KCAI is to the cultural and artistic development of Kansas City, and to business development, and really to the overall development of our city as we move forward and even further into the 21st century. I've got to say, it doesn't really surprise me, though, because looking back on its history, it looks like KCAI has aggressively embraced innovation from the very beginning. So tell us about that. Let's go back to when it got started in 1885 with the Sketch Club and some of the notable names that have been associated with it.
I think people in Kansas City, a group of men and women who founded a sketch club. And basically, they wanted a cultural organization that was going to be about the practice of art. And so they all went up to the Art Institute of Chicago. And they looked at it, because it was one of the great places in America, and they said, how do you do it? How do you teach? What do you teach? What effect do you have? What do you do for your community? And they asked the Art Institute, can you help us? So the Art Institute did and sent people down here. And we know there's a record of all of this to try to help the Sketch Club move from being a sketch club, fairly lightweight, to something really serious and something that would do something wonderful for Kansas City. So when the phone rang one day and the late Steve Metzler, chair of the board of the Kansas City Art Institute, called me up and asked if I would come down here as an interim president, I thought, well, that's a long-lost cousin calling. I have to do this. And Steve was fantastic. You know, I asked him what his ambition was for life, and he said, oh, I intend to change the world one cocktail at a time.
Oh, that sounds like Steve. Steve was a good friend of mine, too. So, yes.
So I thought, I like the sound of this chap. This is going to be fun. So I came and discovered a city full of treasures. And I think it was interesting that we came in the middle of the winter. We came in December of 14. The plaza was all lit up. The lights had just been come on. But we started wandering around and we started getting free distribution newspapers like The Pitch. And we started looking at the cultural assets in the city. I thought, my Lord, this city is really buzzing. There's more than my wife and I could possibly do. Music, theater, dance, writing, you know, all sorts of stuff. I thought, this is really great. And it's amazing. And then people would say, you know, you're at the Art Institute. Where is that again? What is that in Overland Park? Or didn't know where it was and certainly didn't know what it had done. It wasn't until I started mentioning names like, well, you know, did you know that Walt Disney was a student there? Do you know that Robert Rauschenberg was a student there? Do you know about Robert Morris? Do you know about Thomas Hart Benton? Mm-hmm. And do you know about one of the superstars of contemporary art worldwide, Nick Cave? You know, We thought they were from somewhere else. Well, where did you think they were from? For goodness sake, have some pride.
Yeah, definitely some major names have crossed our paths. And you are building on that legacy. Obviously, we're very glad that you did accept the invitation to come here to Kansas City. And you're doing so many things. Let's go back now and talk about some of these recent efforts. Talk to us about two very important things that you have introduced. And one of them is to create an entrepreneurial minor for artists and also a new major in product design that's going to be coming in 2020, I believe. Tell us about those two initiatives and how they will not just help the artists, but also businesses here in Kansas City.
You're right. And that certainly is our intention, to be part of the creative industries and to help people. Help the professions here in Kansas City. We're not doing that alone. We're doing it in partnership with the Block School at UMKC. And in the case of product design, it's a sort of triangular program. So we teach design, but the engineering school at UMKC will teach material sciences and engineering theory and design. and the Block School will teach entrepreneurship. You put that together, and you're giving a student an opportunity to be original, to be highly creative, to be really smart, but have a future for those ideas. Otherwise, they just hit the wall. But if you know what to do, if you're a natural entrepreneur, or we train you to be an entrepreneur, you know how to take those ideas forward. And, you know, that's a really exciting thing. We get lots and lots of students come to the college and they want to know what we do. And, they're thinking about enrolling. And we give them an opportunity to see what it's like in the studios. And I ask them the leading question. Did you like what you saw? Do you want to do that for the rest of your life? And they put their hands up and say yes. So it's our responsibility then to teach them, to work with them, to give them an education, allow them to be free-form designers, technologists, media specialists, people working across a wide range of materials. But at the end of that, when they leave the greenhouse, because you know we're a pretty hot school, you leave the greenhouse and go out into that cold world out there. You need to know that those first steps are based in a knowledge of how to put a business together. How can you go on being highly creative and yet set up something that's exciting and new and will sustain you through your life?
So from the business side, how is that helping the local businesses?
Well, we've talked to lots and lots of local businesses. So all the big architectural firms, you know, all the big design firms. We talked to Cerner. We talked to Garmin. We lots and lots of people about what does this community want? And basically, it comes down to they want new ideas. They want innovators, you know. In the banking world, you're working all the time with venture capital. You know, we work with venture talent.
I love that. Venture talent, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about another business partnership that you have, the sponsored studio projects. Tell us about those.
This is an opportunity for us and our young students to interface with professionals in environments. So it could be a high school, it could be a bank, it could be a wherever, to create murals, to create prints, to create artwork, create sculpture that can be on a rotating basis. So the people who come into your lobbies or your business see something and a month later it's different, you know, or sometimes it's something is rather more permanent, like the murals that we're doing in the schools,
yes,
which goes back to the old WPA days. And gosh, Kansas City has a huge part had a part to play in all of that. So Sponsored Studio is an opportunity to do something new and different. It's been accessed by all sorts of businesses and corporations in Kansas City, and it's really meant a big difference for us. It means a student is working with a demanding professional as a client, you know, and that's an interface that you can't have in the studio. You have to have it with a real person from the banking world, the architecture world, the design world, who's going to say, I want you to do this. I want you to be highly creative, but here are the parameters. You know, this is how much it can cost, materials. It's going to be on the wall for a certain amount of time. Or set it up as a real-life experiment.
Give me some examples of some of the projects that you have worked on with businesses through the Sponsored Studio.
I'll tell you a good example that I really like. I thought it was very innovative and very smart. David Manica, the architect, came to us and said he was designing a very beautiful new bar. It's very stylish, called the Monarch Bar. Well, it could be monarch as in terms of kings and queens, but also it could be butterflies.
Definitely.
So it came up with this rather wonderful idea that you needed something signature, something completely different. So the Sponsored Studio project between David and the college was to come up with something that would be a whole ceiling as a gigantic chandelier of butterflies, of monarch butterflies. So as student designers worked with them on how to do this and came up with a design based on the shape of the monarch butterfly, and then laser cut those and cut them with routers as well up in our David T. Beale studio for art and technology, then heated them and bent them over molds so that they are transparent, but they have the shape of the butterfly, and you can see one through the other, and then stack them 4 or 5 high. And we hung them in this ceiling space in the middle of the Monarch Bar, and it is a sight to see.
Oh, incredibly
and it changes
impressive.
Color, too, which is really quite wonderful. So it was an opportunity to work with a very, very high-class architect on a technically very, very demanding brief from that architect that had to work and be appreciated by thousands and thousands of people who go to the Monarch Bar. That kind of studio-sponsored project is a perfect example of what we could do that is a real surprise. People say, I didn't know you could do that. Well, we do.
Well, and it's a great example of what you talked about, where you may not know that you're intersecting with the Art Institute and the students, and yet a good example is the Monarch Bar. Children's Mercy Hospital, another icon in Kansas City. It doesn't surprise me that you have joined up with them. Tell us how you're partnering with Children's Mercy Hospital.
That's really been an amazing thing. We built a brand new studio called the David T. Beale Studio for Art and Technology. So it's packed with 3D printers and rapid prototypers. So we can take digitally created big files and we can make a 3D object. So it is a wonder to behold.
It's crazy what you can create with those 3D
printers. People come
printers.
And they look at it and they say, you know, I don't believe what I'm seeing here. How is it doing that? How is this machine spinning a 4 foot high form? It's like it's a digital potter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see this thing being created right in front. So we started talking more about how can you make things that are really helpful, that are important to a profession. So obviously, if you're an industrial designer, you can make something. You can make a prototype. You could do something for architects and architecture. But what if you're a surgeon? So the challenge was working with Children's Mercy. They told us a lot about the challenges of contemporary surgery with children. Small children, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right? And we had three surgeons who were absolutely wonderful. Certainly told me more than I ever wanted to know about the human heart and its mobility and how it grows and how it moves within the chest cavity. And they said, what we really want to be able to be better surgeons is we need MRIs, we need, you know, sonograms, we need all of that information. But before we actually go into a child in order to operate on their heart, we need to know what that heart looks like. We need a three-dimensional model of that heart, and that heart has to be produced the day before surgery. It can't be 10 days old. Further, it is specific to the child. It's not a generic heart. We need to know where the heart is within the chest cavity because they move around. Mm-hmm. We need to know what size it is. We need to do the issues in the heart. You know, is it the descending aorta? You know, can we see the blood flow through the heart? So for the first time, we started working with them on the visualization through 3D printing to create a three-dimensional heart. So we have them, and they're about the size of a thumbnail. And we also have them, you know, they're about the size of they can be the size of your hand. It means that the surgeons can look at that and know exactly what they need to do. The faster they're in there, the faster they work, the faster a recovery time, because it's not generic, it is specific to the child. Well, that opens up all sorts of wonderful opportunities. Comes out of a medical illustration program that we do.
You were talking earlier about some of the construction that's going on campus. One of those is the Paul and Linda DeBruce Hall. It's an 18,000 square foot, state of the art, right there at 44th and Oak. Tell us about the building's namesakes first. And then how the building's going to change the campus and student experience.
It's a transformative building. Paul and Linda DeBruce are well-known business people and philanthropists and love the arts. Have been very, very important donors to the Nelson Atkins Museum. Just wonderful people. And we talked about the importance of how you can teach the liberal arts and art history, and how do you teach that to contemporary students and make that highly relevant. And one of the things I said was, you know, the thing about art history is it's not like art history is good for you. That's like eat your vegetables.
Right.
You know, it's alive. And the reason it's alive is because we're sitting right between the Kemper Museum, which is dedicated to contemporary practice, and a magnificent historical museum, which also teaches contemporary practice, the Nelson Atkins.
Yes.
And so my colleagues, Julian and Sean at the Kemper, you know, we talk about how do you teach cultural history that is relevant? How does a student place themselves in that continuum of art history? What is the history of design? What's the history of materials? What's the history of technologies and media? And we couldn't do that. So Paul and Linda responded to the real thing is you need a new facility that's dignified, that's flexible, it's a dynamic space, and it needs to be a landmark building. It needs to be something strong. So we went, of course, to a Kansas City architect because I believe very strongly that we should be using local talent, giving them an opportunity. So, and we do that also with the construction companies that actually build things for us. We've gone to many of them, and we went in this case to Matthew Huft,
sure,
who is a terrific mid-career architect. And we gave him this challenge. We want a 20,000 square foot building of real distinction, which is going to be different, but fits in to the neighborhood of South Moreland and Rock Hill. Nothing too disjunctive, and yet something original and strong. And so he's designed something, and believe me, it is going to get people's attention. This building is terrific.
What a great vision to think about using the building in that way. Will this be open to the public at all?
We're beginning to develop now a program for it. So firstly, of course, it's a teaching facility, but it has a rather wonderful atrium, top-lit atrium, and a garden behind it. So we're already thinking about our art history conferences and events that we can be doing, lectures and presentations and seminars, etc. So we're very committed to our neighborhood. I like being up there. I lived up there. Actually, my wife and I lived on Rock Hill for 2 years. I like the neighborhood. I like the people. I like the buildings. We need to do something for them. We're building, at the moment, the new Café Nerman.
Yes.
Right at the front gates. Or why is it at the front gates? It's so that we can say to the public, come in and have a cup of coffee and a muffin. You know, if you're bringing your dog, you can, you know, here's a place where you can give the dog some water and tie the dog up. And if you're jogging by and suddenly need some caffeine, come in.
I like that about Kansas City. You know, the Kauffman Performing Arts Center had that philosophy to open up these concerts and these performances to everybody. And I'm hearing more and more about that. I mean, you just expressed it yourself with, you know, if you're walking your dog, come in and have a muffin. I like the way Kansas City is going in that direction.
I think we're doing that for our locals. Obviously, we're doing it for our own community. We're doing it for the Rock Hill and South Moreland community. We're also doing it for the hundreds of thousands of people are going to be coming to Rock Hill when the streetcar arrives.
Yes, I want to talk about the streetcar because you've been such an outspoken proponent of the streetcar and especially in getting a stop there. So tell us about why you feel so strongly about that and what your vision for what the streetcar can do.
If you're from Kansas City and you think about Rock Hill, and you looked at it, say you had an aerial photograph or a map. You know. On one side, you have the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art. On the other side, you have the Nelson Atkins. And in the middle, you've got us, right? Two showrooms and a factory. Well, what's going to happen on that hill? We're going to open up a new gallery that is going to be under construction in the coming year. And you've got the two museums already. You're going to have thousands of people getting off the streetcar right outside the Marriott and Kimpton hotels. They're going to be walking along that street. They'll see giant pieces of sculpture. They'll go to the Kemper. They'll look across the road, and there's another piece of sculpture sitting right next to our front gates. They'll cross the road. They'll start to walk from sculpture to sculpture to sculpture, walking through our campus, and the next thing you know, they're right at the Donald J. Hall Sculpture Park at the back of the Nelson Atkins. So Julian, Sean and I and the neighborhood, we're all talking about what is that going to mean to the quality of life, to the neighborhood, what's going to happen to visitors, what happens to us who live and work there, but what experience does Kansas City want to give to a visitor who's come for a convention and has taken the streetcar and alighted at that corner on Main and walks into this cultural district? What happens? Where do they sit down? Where do they go to the restaurant? Where do they have coffee? Where's the signage? How do they move through the space? Are these things fixed forever or do they change constantly? We're all talking cooperatively and collaboratively as to what we can do to make that a better experience for visitors as well as people who live here.
So overall, how can Kansas City's embrace of the artistic community lead to community growth and economic development?
I think there are three or four things that can happen. In the fine art area, if you like, we know there are collectors here. There are people who support the college. You know, we have our student exhibitions all the time. People come and buy tons of work. Those people are sensitized to that kind of expression, and they take work home. And, you know, we do the roller printing that we do out in various parking lots. So it really excites people. But the arguably the bigger and wider impact, although much less not so easy to identify, is the impact of design, technology, and media. And the more we talk to people who, like the city, we talk to people about design innovation and wanting to have more digital upload, to have more post-production facilities, stuff that's going on that feeds into the developing industry. So whether that is furniture design on one hand, or something that's completely five-dimensional and screen-based and exists only in the cyber world. Everybody that I've spoken to in industry and the professions in Kansas City says we need more. We need more smart, well-trained students who are highly innovative, who can come and work with us. And the city, I think, is very sensitive to the issue that there's a need for some kind of incubator facility. There's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you look at what goes on at Studios Inc. Look at what goes on at Charlotte Street. You know, all of these things are there, and they're all absolutely terrific. But my sense is they're a little disconnected. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be some theory of what it is that we want all of these organizations to contribute to the quality of life in Kansas City, to contribute to all of those companies who say, innovation. If we don't have innovation, then we can't secure the market we've got, we can't advance that market, and we can't create a market that we haven't even dreamed of.
That's very true. Talk to us, though, about beyond Kansas City. What are the changes that are occurring and the programs that you are working, like with Children's Mercy? How is that going to attract others to Kansas City?
I think it's one word, relevance. So what I see in talking to my colleagues who run other schools of art and design, you know, whether it's Rhode Island or CalArts or Chicago, obviously, we all talk about this. Yeah. And it's tough out there. And we've seen schools of art and design in America close, completely close. I mean, Memphis College of Art, founded in the 1920s, you know, old college, has closed. Oregon College of Arts and Crafts in Portland has just closed. There are others that have had to merge, disappear, justly won't make it because they're not relevant. They're not talking to industry. They're not talking to the professions. They're not talking to galleries. They're not talking, you know, they're just not looking at the relevance of the education. You know, we said a little earlier something about applied arts.
Yes.
And that's what we're looking at. It's applied creativity and innovation that has a real role. It's rewarding and exciting for the student. They're not compromising their artistic ability, their sense of innovation at all, but they're applying that. And students who have an acute sense of social responsibility love this kind of approach.
Which more and more of the younger students
absolutely
have.
Absolutely. More and more of them are saying that. So we teach social practice and, you know, application of your ideas. Can it help? Does it do something for your society? Does it do something? Does it fill a gap? Does it define a need? Yes, it does. And would you like to work in that world? Yes, every day of my life, I'd like to work in that world.
Yes, you are doing wonderful things at the Art Institute. It's going to be exciting to watch this vision unfold, and especially in the next 2 years with the new buildings that are going up. And then, if the streetcar comes through there, I just want to thank you for all your work on behalf of Kansas City and for the arts community. Thank you so much.
Proud to do it. Thank you very much.
This is Joe Close, president of Country Club Bank. Tony Jones, the faculty and students of the Kansas City Art Institute are vital to the cultural and artistic development of Kansas City. But they're not only helping shape creative visionaries to develop and produce amazing works of art, they're playing a key role in the evolution of our city. Through its new venture, the Art Institute is helping marry the creative arts with entrepreneurship. They're working to give students not only the creative skills to succeed artistically, but the business acumen to succeed as an entrepreneur. And the combining of those skills makes our city, its people, and businesses better. The Kansas City Art Institute, as Tony puts it, works with venture talent. They're helping to encourage innovators and creative thinkers to go out into our community and solve real problems across multiple industries, like the school's partnership with Children's Mercy. They're tackling long-standing problems in new, unexpected ways to create lasting change in Kansas City. Country Club Bank, member FDIC.